You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
You can continue, Mr. Privilege.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to speak to you just really briefly about the law that the court asked earlier if everyone would be willing to follow the instructions as given by this court. I believe everybody answered affirmatively, correct? Anybody here have a law or a rule they don't like? People are either grinning or
holding up there.
We all probably have something, some rule or law we don't like. But it's important for both sides to receive a fair trial that we can all agree on what the law is in this courtroom and that it is what the court gives to us. Is there anybody who feels like there may be some type of situation where they would just go with their gut rather than what the court gives? Sorry. Sure, 505.
Then thank you, Vaughn.
Well, and I ask, because you mentioned briefly something about that in your questionnaire. And I'm not calling you out for it, and there's no wrong answer. You can answer that however you want.
Comes from my background as a lawyer. If there has to be something wrong, we would do that.
Sure.
I don't know the instruction.
Okay.
That's why.
Okay, that clarifies that. So that you can commit to what the judge gives you as the law, you will follow that law for this case.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Your Honor, I'm going to turn my remaining time over to Ms. Blake.
All right.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being here this afternoon. I know it's getting later afternoon and you were all here last week, so we appreciate you hanging in there with us for this process. As you've already heard a couple times, we all take this very serious. We want to ensure that we select a jury that can be fair and impartial to both the state and the defendant, Chad Daybell. So that's why we go through this process. So I don't know about all of you, but I have a two-year-old that when he wakes up in the morning, if I ask him, what do you want for breakfast? It's usually cheesy eggs. And there's a very specific recipe that I'm supposed to use to make his cheesy eggs. It's eggs, milk, cheese, salt and pepper, and usually, you know, some extra cheese in there. He doesn't like me to vary that recipe. So I saw some people kind of smile and nod along. Do any of you have that experience either with children or someone else that you work with, and whether it's a recipe they like you to make a certain way or something they like done a certain way? Can everyone relate to that? And your 686, I see you shaking your head. What's your experience with that?
I've had several siblings and did several people that had children, and it's very much the same. The kid wants, you know, peanut butter and jelly a certain way, you make it that way without, you know, any variation.
And in your experience, were you usually willing to go along with how they wanted it made?
Most of the time, yeah.
And were there times that you thought, man, if they just add this or if they just do it this way, it'd probably be a lot better?
Yeah.
And Juror 740, did you shake your head yes as well? And what's your experience with that?
Just in work and processes. People are set in their ways.
And are there times when you go along with what their ways are if it's their call to make?
Yes.
And so I know I use kids as the example, but as you're here today, and Mr. Wood touched on it a little bit already, but the judge is going to give you some jury instructions. And he's going to give you verdict forms that outline what the elements are of each count. And sometimes it's easy to say, well, it would make more sense if it was this, or why don't they add this, or why don't they take this away? But could all of you commit that this is the recipe, this is the instruction that you would have to follow? Does anyone have concerns with that? Does anyone have concerns that if you thought some part of it didn't make sense, that you'd have a hard time following that? I don't see anyone shaking their head yes on that. Does anyone here have concerns? You're going to hear from a lot of witnesses in this case. Does anyone have concerns if you hear from someone that holds different religious views than you do, whether or not you would be able to give their testimony the appropriate weight and credibility you think it was due? Does that cause anyone concerns? And So I'm someone that while it would be smart and easy to just check the weather app in the morning, I don't. And so I'm the person that leaves home without an umbrella and then there's a rainstorm, or I dress in shorts and there's a snowstorm. So I don't know, have any of you, if you had gone to work or if you showed up today and as you got here, the sky was starting to turn a little overcast, it's turning a little gray, and you came in here and all the windows get shut and the blinds are shut while you're in here, and you go outside and you notice water on your car, you notice water all over the pavement, water on the grass, water everywhere, would you be able to determine what had happened? And juror 653, I see you nodding and saying, yeah. And what would you determine had happened? And juror 647, would you be able to determine?
Technically, I would assume that it would be, but I didn't know.
But if everything was wet,
mm-hmm.
all around.
Yes.
And so even though you didn't see the rain, you didn't actually see the rain clouds, you would be able to pull all of that information together to reach a conclusion. And so you may hear the term circumstantial evidence. So you may see different types of evidence in this case. Does anyone have concerns if you're only shown certain types of evidence in weighing that and giving it the weight it's due? Would anyone have concerns if you weren't shown a specific type of evidence that you thought you should see? So does anyone here watch CSI? No, we don't have the CSI people. Oh, I see maybe a nod. Is that juror 526?
I've seen it in the past.
More of the criminal line. So if you weren't shown a certain type of evidence that they might show in a TV drama or something you've watched, would that cause you concern with weighing the evidence that you are shown? You feel that you could take whatever evidence is given you and give it the weight it's due and draw that conclusion? And the judge in this case, actually, let me back up. The judge has read off the charges in this case. So we have some counts of conspiracy to commit murder, and we have some charges of first degree murder. Would anyone, if you're given the instruction, so we talked about that recipe, if you're given an instruction from the judge, and one of the elements is not that we have to show what the cause of death was. So the state has the burden, but if one of the elements is not to actually show what caused the death, so instead that we had to show or prove that the defendant engaged in conduct that caused the death, but we didn't have to prove the actual cause of death, does that cause anyone concerns? Would you be able to hold the state to the burden of showing, of meeting that element that a murder had occurred, but not add an additional element that isn't in the instruction? Anyone have concerns with that? And you heard the judge give an instruction earlier today regarding conspiracy, and that is conspiracy are a couple of the charges here that you're going to be looking at today. Does anyone here have concerns? Because you, if you hear evidence regarding actions of other co-conspirators, does anyone have concerns in following the court's instruction that the conspiracy would be an agreement between certain parties to commit a criminal offense, and then one of those parties doing an act in furtherance of it? Knowing that, would anyone have concerns holding one person accountable for the actions of another co-conspirator? So if the state met the burden that all the parties had formed an agreement and only one person did an act in furtherance, if you're given an instruction that says just one person has to do that act, does anyone have concerns if holding one of the other parties accountable that didn't do that act in furtherance? So, and again, the court will be the one to give you the final instructions, but if you're given an instruction with a conspiracy, it requires two or more persons to enter into some form of an agreement to commit a criminal act, and then that one of those persons commits some kind of an overt act in furtherance of the conspiracy. If person A didn't commit that overt act, but they were part of the agreement, would you have a hard time holding them accountable, even though it was person B that committed that overt act? And thank you for telling me you didn't understand. I should have said that. If anyone ever has any questions, please let me know. So with that additional explanation, would anyone have concerns holding person A accountable along with person B? I see people shaking their heads. No. I may have just a moment. That's all the questions the state has right now.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Pryor, you can conduct for Dyer with the group. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Pryor. I'm here today representing Mr. Daybell. I want to start off by telling you a little story. And many years ago, when I told it to the other folks before you, I was a juror in a jury trial. And the lawyer in that jury trial asked, is there anybody who just doesn't want to be here? And I smiled, and eventually I put up my hand and said, yeah, I don't want to be here. And it wasn't anything of a significant trial. It was just one of these things that I had so much going on as a student, a lot of other obligations, that I just didn't feel like I could focus or do the job that was necessary. So I'm going to submit that to all of you. And that, folks, it's really important. More important than anything else, we just need to be truthful with each other. And there's no wrong or right answer. There really isn't. If you don't want to participate in something, the best thing to do is say, you know, I just don't want to do this. Because like anything else, when I have chores around my house to do, and it's time to take the garbage out, and I don't like taking the garbage out, and I'm going to do everything I can to avoid taking the garbage out. And if it's something that you just don't feel like you want to do, you know, you would generally not put the effort into it that you would put into something that you enjoy doing or something that you feel okay about doing. So again, is there anybody here who, and please be honest, it's really what it's all about. There's no wrong, there's no right answer. It's what answer is in here, and that goes to each of you. I'm not going to judge. These folks are not going to judge. And at this point, the judge isn't going to judge. It's a play on words, I think. So again, is there anybody here who just doesn't want to be here today and just doesn't want to be involved in this? And please be honest with me. Is there anybody here who believes that because Chad has been charged with this offense, that he's guilty right now? No. Okay. Is there anyone who can affirmatively tell me that they're going to listen to the entire evidence in this case? I mean, all of the evidence. That means after the state of Idaho, these prosecutors put on their case, and after Chad and I have an opportunity to put on our case, that you're going to wait before you make a decision in this case. Can everybody promise me that? Put the cards in. You can promise me that, please. Thank you. And I'll try not to get you to exercise this too much, okay? I'll try to be patient with all of you as far as that's concerned. Is there anybody here who feels that they can't sit for long periods of time, that they're going to have a difficulty in sitting through this, whether it's medical issues, whether it's because you tend to twitch, or you tend to not be able to sit for long periods of time, or you don't have the patience? Okay, and then I'm concerned, and again, there's no wrong answer, because same thing, if you watched occasionally, I'm moving around because I don't like to sit. It makes me uncomfortable, particularly in these chairs that the state of Idaho has decided to provide for me. So why don't you elaborate a little bit on the fact about your situation?
I don't want to go into detail, just medical.
Well, if it's something that's private, I don't want to.
Oral medical, it's with breaks and things like that.
Okay, is this something that's going to cause you some pain?
No, just discomfort.
Okay, is that discomfort something that's going to cause you to be distracted and not be able to focus as much as you really should in something as serious as this?
Usually no.
Okay, it's just something you wanted to bring to my attention?
Yeah.
Is there any possibility whatsoever that this is going to be a distraction in any way for you?
Not a distraction for me, maybe for the...
Okay. 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 You're comfortable that you think you might be able to sit through this?
Yeah.
And if there's any doubt, again, you know, there's no wrong answer. But if there's any doubt about that, please let us know. Okay. Is there anybody here who knows, other than these folks who are in the courtroom behind me, anybody in this courtroom right now from these stands forward? No. Now, Ms. Blake touched on a little bit about the course instructions. She talked about what the conspiracy was and went into some detail about the fact that there has to be an agreement. Then juror 536, we needed a little bit of a clarification. And is there anybody who can't follow the court's instruction? Yes. One of the court's instructions, it's going to be in regards to a conspiracy, is that the prosecuting attorney is going to have to prove that there's an agreement, and that this agreement has to be among the parties who are accused to be in this conspiracy. Okay? Is there anybody here who doesn't understand what an agreement is? Juror number 526, what do you understand an agreement? If you don't know, that's okay. We'll just, we can pass the...
You've said something and somebody else agrees.
Okay.
And there's positive affirmation. They have the same opinion.
Okay. And juror number 536, you were shaking your head. I saw that. And she said the words, and I want to make sure I say what you said, which was, I think it was positive affirmation. And juror 536, what do you think about it?
Yeah. Be of the same thought.
Well,
you're saying specifically. To do a certain act.
Okay.
You can agree on something, not for me to do something.
Okay. And juror, I'm going to reach to the back, and juror number 686. How do you, how do you feel about this idea of the agreement? How do you define that?
Two or more parties come to a similar plan, agree on the details of the plan, or whatever the idea is. Having trouble defining an agreement, but both parties have a similar thought and have stated that they ask each other.
So do they have to be, does it have to be stated?
For an agreement? For a direct agreement, yes. For an implied agreement, if everything else around it matches, then yes, but that. And that can be argued either way.
It can be argued either way. So if you don't have the people making a positive affirmation, we have some questions about that.
Not entirely sure how to answer that.
And that's okay. And it can be a confusing issue, can it? Okay. And juror number 653, how do you feel about
that? I didn't say there's multiple aspects.
Okay. Okay. And I'm going to move on to juror number 647. Is it an agreement if someone is tricked into it or fooled into it?
No, because they weren't given all the information or the proper information.
So in order to have an agreement, everybody needs to know what's going on. Know the terms.
Yeah.
Okay. Juror number 631, what do you think about what 647 just said?
I agree.
Okay. Is that it? Straight to the point, right? And juror number 617.
I agree, Chief. I think that you don't have all the information and you tripped into it's not an agreement.
Okay, all right, thank you. How do you folks, I think I'm going to pass on that judgment. You know, at this point, I think I'm going to pass it. I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you very much, folks. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you, counsel.
You know, can we just ask a couple questions?
In the group setting here?
Yeah, we believe there's something that we should. That some law has perhaps been
maybe misimplied.
Judge, can we approach, please?
Yeah, we can approach.
At this time, we've concluded the attorney's for our questioning. The court's going to now move on to a phase of individual questioning for jurors on certain topics. And so we will start with our lowest number, 440, I believe. Is that you? And we'll have the other jurors excused to the jury room while we discuss individual topics with the jurors. So if you're not juror 440, please follow the bailiff out to the jury room. We'll call you back in when we get to you.
All right, please.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, juror number 440, we've got some indication in your questionnaire regarding both topics of potential what we call bias. Don't take it personally. It's a question of whether or not you formed any type of an opinion based on pretrial coverage, and the other issue of a potential, there was some concern of hardship raised in your questionnaire also that I would permit the attorneys to ask about. So with this juror, counsel, if we can begin there, we'll move on to the other topic of the death penalty opinions and views once we get through bias or hardship concerns. If the state's prepared, you can proceed with individual voir dire for juror number 440.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror number 440, I want to clarify a few things in your questionnaire to see if they're accurate, if they are going to cause any concern, or if they're not. So just starting with the hardship section, looking at your questionnaire, and I think they've given you a copy of it for your benefit if you need it, but I'm just down on page 20. And with trial length, it had indicated that your stepson's high school graduation in Wisconsin is on May 24th. I wasn't sure from that, is that something you're planning on attending?
If I could have the purchase component, he also is planning on taking the military at Washington
And graduation from the military, you said he's just going to be joining. So it's not going to be a super quick graduation. Okay, just making sure. So with regard to that, if you were selected to serve on the jury, that wouldn't end up causing you any concern. Knowing that that graduation was going on and you were here, would you be thinking about it? Would it create any concerns for your ability to focus on the case and the matter at hand? Thank you. And then just on the other one, and I think this was with in regards to sequestration, you just indicated that you have school-age children that depend on you for care. If you were to be sequestered for any amount of time in this case, would that cause you concern, a hardship?
I would say not too much. You're pretty independent when I'm not around. If I gave you a some comment, and I have family that lives nearby.
And so you think if you were to be sequestered, you'd be able to figure out the child care? Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing anything additional there. So thank you for that. And then just looking with regard to bias, and I'm looking at page 19, there's just the question, it's F actually. If you formed a personal opinion regarding Chad Daybell's guilt or innocence, you'd indicated yes. And then you wrote, I do have an opinion, though it has been based only by what the media has reported, which is not always accurate. What exactly did that mean with regard to your opinion?
I know that not media is not going to have all of the facts, and what they do have might not be accurate. But, so just knowing that, you know, I see the news reports and that has caused me to form an opinion. But I feel like, you know, whatever the facts are presented, that could change how I feel about it.
And when you say that could change how you feel about it, would you be willing to share how you feel about it right now?
Based on what I have seen, I would say yes, that he's good.
And knowing that the court, we talked about the recipe and following the court's instructions, knowing that the court will give you some instructions, do you feel that you would be able to follow a court instruction to set aside anything that you've seen in the media and base any verdict only on what's presented in the courtroom in the trial in this matter? I don't have any further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. White. Mr. Pryor. Yeah.
Terms of communication. Is that better? Okay. In terms of the trip to Wisconsin, are you driving or are you flying?
We would fly. If my husband knows, he's going to fly. But we haven't made any type of call.
Okay. And it's a desire, and it's a desire for both of you to go, though.
That's a problem.
Is it going?
Actually, it might not. For all of us
to go. Okay. So there really hasn't been a determination as to whether you're all going or not.
That's correct.
But you just have a desire to go.
Right.
Is it going to cause you any anguish or cause you to lack the ability to focus on this at a time when this graduation is going on and you may be here as a juror in this case? Okay. And thank you for your honesty. I really appreciate it. Judge, if I could just have a moment, please.
Yes.
You made a comment that you formed an opinion.
Yes.
And you said, however, the media has a may not always represent things as they actually are, and that there could be some slant in the way the media reports things. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. But at this point, you have an opinion about this case, correct? And may I ask you what that opinion is? Okay. Now, are you going to maintain that opinion and say, well, I think he's guilty, and that's what your opinion is right now, correct? But if you see other evidence that suggests otherwise, you're open to changing your opinion. But at the present time, as you stand before us right now, you believe that Mr. Daybell is guilty, and that's the opinion you're going to go forward with, unless evidence is shown to suggest to you something differently. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay, Judge, I'm going to move for cause, if I could, please.
All right. Courts considered the responses here. Based on those responses, juror number 440, I'm going to sustain the challenge for cause for bias. Again, nothing personal or trying to find jurors that don't have a preconceived notion of guilt or innocence. Just because you do, nothing wrong with that. You've followed the news as many people have. And in this particular case, we're attempting to find jurors where the defendant's not improperly working against an assumption or bias someone may have. So for that reason, juror number 440, I am going to excuse and uphold the defense challenge. Thank you very much for filling out your questionnaire, for your honest answers today. Thank you for taking the time to come back in, and please drop your questionnaire off with the bailiff as you exit. All right, let's next have juror 505 return. All right, juror 505 has returned for individual without questioning. Just briefly reviewing the questionnaire again. You do have some prior connection or knowledge of one of the potential witnesses in this case, great FPTN. An additional concern may be some coverage you followed in the news. And so I'll let the state follow up on any additional regard and rejoice for this, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror 505, you mentioned you have met Greg Hampeke. What was the nature of your meeting with him?
I'm an auditor where he works. I'm an auditor speaker one time.
Okay. And was there anything about that interaction that would cause you to give him greater or lesser weight as a witness? No. So you could take him as a witness with a clean slate and just weighted whatever he says, all the other evidence.
Yep.
You mentioned that you had seen, you think, a Dateline.
I saw a special. My wife watches Dateline. That's why I put that down.
Okay.
Yeah, it was one of the specials.
And I noticed that you thought it was that, but you weren't sure exactly that. That's what it was. Do you recall when you saw this special?
That was more than a year ago.
Okay. And do you recall, that not you need to say at all, that the content of that special, what it was about?
No, just the basic, pretty much what's been on the news. Okay. I recall.
And was there anything in that special that led you to lean either way as to the potential guilt or innocence of this defendant?
Not really. I don't remember it, to be honest with you, so not been special.
Okay, so you remember seeing it, but you don't really recall the content too much.
Yeah.
And you feel like you can, whatever you did see, it didn't cause you to form an opinion, correct? And you feel like you could put that out of your mind and render an impartial verdict. I did notice it said in your questionnaire you've had some training in forensic accounting.
Yeah, I'm a certified law examiner.
Okay.
I was the ACFE chapter president.
Okay. So without going into detail, there will be some evidence in this case that deals with accounting of funds at some level. Having that expertise you have, are you going to, do you think you might be kind of critiquing that accounting either way?
You know, it would be hard for me to turn that off. No, I would regret it, but it's another professional's way of thinking about it. It's what we do.
Okay. And so would you be able to look at that evidence in a light that it's shown and weigh it against all the other evidence?
Yeah.
Okay. So neither of this defendant or the state has to worry that you'll get hyper focused on one portion of the case.
So,
and I always say that because I kind of do that sometimes with, you know, like, I have nothing else about bias.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wood. Mr. Pryor.
No, nothing, Judge. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The next matter the court will discuss with this jury then will be as it relates to your questionnaire starting page 12. We have a section in here called Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty. Juror number 505, do you recall reading through those questions and filling out the answers for those questions in that section?
Yes, indeed.
And do you still concur with or agree with the answers you provided in the questionaire?
Can we begin real quick?
Yeah, go ahead and review them, and that goes on for about two pages to the end of 13. Very well. As we mentioned earlier in the proceedings, in this case, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty, and remember that any penalty you consider should be considered as if it is absolute and will be carried out in this case. So with that in mind, knowing this is not a hypothetical set of questions, but questions about this case, you've indicated on your questionnaire, I'll note, there's a line that says, do you support or oppose the death penalty? There was not a response or check there. Is that something you intentionally passed over because you thought it was yes or no, or did you just forget to answer it?
I had a tough time answering no. I didn't.
Okay, so you considered it, you didn't have a yes or no?
Yeah.
Very well. You next indicated you would, it says, do you feel your views on the death penalty would prevent or substantially impair your ability to view the facts impartially? You said no. Do you still agree with, although you have mixed feelings about it, that you would be able to view the facts impartially.
Yeah.
The box you circled, or letter on page 13 that you circled on that bottom set of choices for what most accurately represents the way you feel, you selected choice C, which says, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in this case. Do you believe that is an accurate statement of how you feel about the topic?
It's the closest one out of those choices.
Okay. One final question then for the court. Do you believe that you'd be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed? Okay. Regardless of your personal thoughts, then, in this case, is there anything that would substantially impair your ability as a juror to perform your duty in accordance with the court's instruction, even if that meant considering the death penalty?
No.
All right. Thank you for your responses. That concludes the court's inquiry on that topic. From the state, any questions on voir dire?
The state doesn't have any questions regarding this issue.
Thank you. Mr. Pryor, any questions for the defense?
And, sir, you mentioned that under item number 6 on page 13, well, let me know when you're there, sir. I'll be there.
Okay.
You circled number C.
Yep.
And if I'm not mistaken, you said, well, that one's the closest to the way I feel. Would it be?
I think that is support or not. I mean, maybe more towards supporting, but yes.
Would it be fair to say that you're neutral?
That's probably the closest.
And if there was a choice between C and D that said, I am neutral on the death penalty, would that be a fair assessment that you'd be neutral on the death penalty?
That was an option.
You would have circled that one? Okay, thank you. And thank you for your time, sir. Judge, I have nothing for it.
Okay. Juror 505, that concludes your individual voir dire. I'll have you return to the jury room with the bailiff to wait for further instructions as we get to the other jurors this afternoon. So next have juror 526. All right, welcome back, juror number 526 for individual voir dire. The court does not see much in the way of any prior case exposure or knowledge. There is some mention of hardship that may be addressed. If the state would like to inquire as to that, then we'll move on to our next topic after hardship's addressed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ma'am, hi. You indicated that you offered dog boarding in your home. Is that something that you do for income?
Yes.
And so if you were selected as a juror in this case, would a 10-week trial cause you financial hardship?
No.
Do you have any pre-existing arrangements or contracts to provide that service with anybody that you would have to cancel or anything of that nature that would provide you hardship or be hardship?
If I was chosen, then I would let the families know that has booked to me. That's something, and I'm no longer available. It's that kind of thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, I tried.
It's okay. You also indicated that you have a little boy who has a birthday on June 1st. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that going to be a local celebration, or would it be something out?
It's supposed to be at my house.
Would there be something about throwing that party or having that celebration that would create a hardship for you that would make you unable to serve on this jury?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have no other questions at this time.
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. The next topic then for juror 526 we're going to discuss is as it relates to the responses you provided in your questionnaire about attitudes regarding the death penalty. So that's a section within the questionnaire starting on page 12. Do you recall reading those questions and providing answers to those questions?
Yes.
And are the responses you provided when you filled this out last week still accurate in the way you feel today?
Yes.
Okay. In the first response, how do you feel about the death penalty? You said, I do not believe in it.
later on the second page 13, there were some choices there. And you said what most accurately represents the way you feel would be choice D, quote, "I am generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case." So I'd like to ask if that is still the way you feel about that topic as you sit here today.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And understand here in this case, we're not just dealing with hypothetical questions now. I would advise you in this case that it may well be necessary for you to make a determination in this case, if you serve on the jury, in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And remember, any penalty you consider should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in the case. So with response to that, you did state that although you may feel opposed to it, you would still follow the facts, law, and instructions in the case, and if required, would be willing to follow those instructions on the death penalty. Is that the way you feel as you sit here today, knowing you may serve as a juror in this case?
Yes. Kind of like what you were saying earlier, the recipe that you're giving. Does that make sense?
It does. So, although it's something you may not be in favor of or like or agree with, if that's the law and the court tells you that is the law, you would be willing to follow an instruction in this case to follow that law?
Yes.
All right. That would conclude the court's voir dire as to this particular juror. Counsel for the state, if you'd like any follow-up, I'll allow that as well as the defense.
I don't have any questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. From the defense to the defense, Judge. All right. That'll conclude our individual voir dire for juror 426. Thank you for coming back and your answers. The bailiff will tell you what happens next, and we'll have juror 536 brought in. All right, juror 536, thank you for returning for some individual questioning here. Reviewing your responses, let me first ask, are all the responses to the best of your recollection still accurate that you provided in this questionnaire?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. There's been some indication of previous knowledge of the case and perhaps an opinion expressed by this juror regarding guilt or innocence. I don't see much in the way of a concern for potential hardship. So for the state, if you'd like to inquire as it relates to any potential bias, I'll begin there and then I'll move to the defense.
Thank you, Your Honor. Excuse me. So ma'am, do you have the other question now with you? I might reference you to some pages just to make this a bit easier. I might call your attention to page 15. Excuse me. My first question, at the bottom of page 15, you did make an indication that you learned some things about this case from local news, and you mentioned perhaps Dateline or some other special. Is that right?
Maybe, yeah. I watch a lot of the shows.
Okay. So then I would just draw your attention down to the next question. It says, I have an opinion that he was involved. That's referencing Chad and Dave Bell. Can you explain that more? What did you mean by your opinion that he was involved? What do you believe as you said that?
If we could mute the on-table mic while we use the handheld, I think. Okay, thanks.
You have a mouse, perhaps. Sorry, ma'am, did you get that question?
So when it was first in the news with the kids missing, it just seemed like a really long time went by and seemed like there were claims of no knowledge at all, or that they were with someone else or... So it just seemed like there was a lot of time that passed where there was no voluntary knowledge of what might have happened.
So without wanting to put words in your mouth, I don't. Is it accurate then to say that you're not sure exactly what you believe? she was involved with. Just that there was involvement. Is that a safe way to say it?
Yeah.
Now, you understand that, as Mr. Daybell says here today, until the state completes our job and proves he's guilty, he's got the benefit of a presumption of innocence. You understand that?
Yes.
Okay. When you make the comment in the questionnaire about you believe he's involved, do you think that's going to impact you and your ability to presume his innocence until you believe he's been proven to be guilty?
No, I know that I need to go by the evidence that we are given.
You're prepared to do that?
Yes.
Okay. I next like to direct your attention that, excuse me, to page 19. On page 19, the very last handwritten response that you made, it says, I can't think of any specifics to point specific involvement or specific actions. And that was in response to a question about an opinion. Did you have any other opinion about Mr. Daybell or this case besides that you believe he was involved in some way?
No.
You on the bias portion, Your Honor, I don't have any more questions for this juror, but I may have some others.
Thank you. Mr. Pryor.
Juror number 536. You made the comment. You think he was involved. Was that based on the facts that you had heard some time ago? And said, you know, looking at this thing, it seems like he has some involvement in this. Would that be fair? Or is that how you feel at the present time?
Well, I guess both then.
Okay. Okay, so going into forward, if you were to be chosen to stay on the juror, is your mindset that he's guilty right now and I'm going to have to prove that he's innocent?
No.
Okay, and that's really what I'm trying to get at is... At the present time, you have information based on what some of these folks in the media have provided to you, right?
Right.
And you recognize that that may not have anything to do with the truth.
Right.
And you may recognize that when media outlets and all of these TV shows that talk about this stuff, they have a tendency to sensationalize things.
Yes.
It's what sells. I mean, newspapers... take all sorts of liberties. TV shows take all sorts of liberties because they have to do that gotcha thing.
Right.
You recognize that.
Yes.
And at this point, you don't have any bias or you haven't made a decision that Mr. Daybell is guilty at this point. Is that fair?
Correct.
So you would be agreeable to looking at all the evidence. That includes what the state of Idaho does and those prosecutors. And what I put on before you actually make your determination of what you're going to do.
Absolutely.
And you will guarantee to all of us that that's the process you're going to go through. And I appreciate you walking through this. And, you understand how important that is, correct?
Yes.
And I'm not trying to talk down or be condescending in any way. I'm just trying to make sure that I, step by step, that we both recognize that it's really important that you look at all the evidence. And hear what everybody has to say before you say, this is how I feel about this case. And then would you be agreeable to that?
Yes.
Okay, Judge, that's all I have. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. All right, juror number 536. The next topic I'd like to cover with you, and I'll have some questions and statements, and after that I'll allow counsel to inquire as well. This relates to attitudes or questions regarding the death penalty, and that's what begins on page 12 of the questionnaire. Do you recall reading those questions and considering and thinking about your thoughts on the death penalty?
Yes.
Are the responses that you provided still the way you feel and accurate today?
Yeah.
Okay. As I stated early in the proceedings, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty in this case. So remember also, any penalty we're considering or discussing here in this case should be done as if it is absolute and will be carried out in the case. So with that in mind, you've made responses that on part B, you say, do you support or oppose it? You indicated you oppose it. Is that correct?
Yes.
And when given just that yes or no answer. Okay. You next indicated in the next two questions that would not impair your ability to view the facts impartially. You still agree with that?
I do.
And you still agree with that would not impair in your ability to return a guilty verdict if the state had proven its case beyond a reasonable doubt?
Right.
Okay. If you look over to page 13, when you were given your choices on pre-written summaries of what you think most accurately represents the way you feel, you selected choice D, which reads, I'm generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Do you still think that would accurately represent your feelings about the death penalty?
Yes.
Okay. So knowing here you may potentially serve in a case where that is something you would have to consider as a juror, let me ask you to confirm, would you be willing to follow the court's instructions on the law, even if you may have some opposition to the death penalty, and follow any instructions given to you, even if it required you to consider that in this case?
Yes.
All right, that will conclude the court's questions as it relates to that particular topic. Moving on to the state, then, any questions from the state on that?
Yes, just a couple, Judge. Ma'am, I don't recall if the court specifically asked this question, but on page 12 of your questionnaire, the first question about the death penalty, you're asked, how do you feel about it? In response was that fiscally, it seems like it tends to waste money with bills. Can you first explain your perspective on that? What do you mean by that?
It just seems like there's a lot of money wasted. And it, with the appeals and everything, it just goes on and on. So, you know, life in prison is a lot of times what they usually end up serving anyway. So yeah, there's just a lot of money spent there.
So is it accurate to say that with that statement, do you feel like a death penalty imposition waste money because of the appellate process, the writ? Is that what you were trying to say or not? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So then, if that's a feeling that you have, and again, we are just asking you to be really honest, would that feeling have any influence on you when you are listening to the facts of the case and then after the verdict and you're asked to consider the death penalty? Well, that feeling that imposition of the death penalty is largely can be a waste of money. Would that influence your willingness to decide to impose it or not?
No, because it's the law here.
Okay. Your Honor, if I may, I had missed one biased statement. May I go back to that topic? It was just one statement.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Ma'am, I do want to go back to the issue of potential bias. On page 15 of your questionnaire, there's a question number 5. It says, could you, your knowledge of Chad cause you to give either greater or lesser weight to these statements I made? And you said yes. Then in your explanation, you wrote, since it seems like he's been untruthful, I would not necessarily believe all statements. In what way have you come to believe that he's been untruthful? What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess first of all, I want to say that I don't necessarily believe everything anyone says. To have the amount of time, like I said before, that it was in the news, you know, where are the kids? And I'm assuming that there was some untruthfulness going on during that time. But yeah, I don't know for a fact.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'll just leave it with the last question. And so that feeling that or assumption that he was in some way untruthful, Is that something that you can set aside and still give him the presumption of innocence until we can prove that he's guilty?
Yeah, but I won't necessarily believe every statement that he makes just because he says the words.
So is it fair to say that you maybe have a bias as to his credibility if he were to take the stand and testify? Is that what you're saying? And I'll remind you, the judge will likely stretch you that you don't have to believe all of anybody's testimony or none of anybody's testimony. It's entirely up to each juror to decide what portion of any witness's testimony they choose to believe. So with that understanding, do you feel like this assumption that he's been truthful is going to cause you to be unwilling, unable to presume that he's innocent?
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.